Is this hour going to be great or unlistable? It's the final hour of 2013 for the Kevin and Bean Show. Ralph, what do you think?
It's going to be great because it's the Pete and the Pig Show.
Hey, Pete here. Ladies and gentlemen,
Pete the Pig, you can have... We got Fun Man and podcaster Bobcat Goldthwait. You're not a podcaster, are you, Bob?
No, I am the one guy that's not.
Hey, Bob, how are you, man?
I'm good. I'm just trying to figure out, you know, how to get a deal to do a podcast show.
Can't come. They're all taken up. There's no more room on the internet.
The band is full.
That's right.
Let me get the business out of the way first. The reason Bob is here is, A, he loves us and can't go a whole year without stopping by. But, B, he's trying to move some tickets at brea.improv.com. Bobcat is going to be right after the first of the year, playing on the weekend of Friday, January 3rd. The 3rd, the 4th, and the 5th tickets, only $20 to see the great stand-up legend, I want to say, Bobcat Goldthwait at the Brea Improv. Now, the Pete and the Pig reference that Ralph is making, I think, bears some explaining for
us. You know, I thought we were just going to skate around that. I didn't even think we were going to bring that up. But I'm one of the directors over on the Mark Maron show, the Maron program on IFC. And
I love that show,
by
the
way.
Very funny. I don't know how long you're going to love it.
All right. Tell me why, Bob, because I'm a little bit nervous just
but
based on what Ralph has told us.
There's a morning team that gets kind of made fun of, perhaps, on the show. And there is one of the part of the team lives in Seattle and does the show remote. But it has nothing to do with you, Bean.
Oh, there's no connection.
And what are these two like?
The two guys do not like each other. One does the show in Los Angeles. The other one does it remotely from Seattle.
Mm-hmm. Come on!
Does one sound kind of drunk?
Pete and the Pig.
Now, listen. I'm about to throw Ralph under the bus.
Oh, come on!
Just before we did it, I go, hey, man, you want to change this? You know, you got to work with the guy. You know, I could change it. We could change it. And he's like, no, let's do this.
All right, now hold on. I need some explanation here. I need a heads up before this thing hits the air. Ralph, are you playing Kevin or are you playing Bean in this imaginary scenario?
Well, neither. I mean, I'm an actor. I created my whole character, you know, my own character out of whole cloth.
Just answer the question.
But I'll have you know that Pete is the one who works in Los Angeles. And the Pig is the one who works from Seattle. So right. I guess
and you're Pete.
Again, and I'm Pete. I'm Pete in Los Angeles.
And again, your name is Big, so it couldn't possibly be you. No. Your name's Bean. So
right. It has nothing to do with a pig.
No, it has nothing to do with a
Except
pig.
Except that you, who, of course, plays, own and love pigs right. and live in
who,
Seattle.
Who plays me?
Although Kimmel said that Bean's the only person that wouldn't be insulted being called a pig.
No, absolutely.
Pigs are our friends. They're very smart animals.
So. Why?
But anyway, to answer your question, the magical Tom Kenny, the legendary voiceover artist, of course, SpongeBob and many other...
Shakes the Clown, hello, that's where I know him best
and
from.
Many other projects.
So wait,
he's the voice of the pig on
that
the,
really
on the
hurt just
show.
Then when he said Shakes the Clown. I was like, I'm really going to shatter this relationship.
why is Maron picking on us?
No, it's not. It's an homage.
Right.
It's an homage.
It's a tribute.
Yeah. You know, you only rib the
like
friends.
Super Diamond loves Neil Diamond so much that they do a cover
and
band.
Tom Kenny loves Bean. loves
oh my God.
Bean.
Why is this
so
happening?
So Maron has to spend the morning with these morning DJs.
And he's having a hard time. well, I don't want to ruin the episode for folks. But
it doesn't go well.
And also, he's very confused because he can't see them. So I wouldn't know what that would be like.
No, to do a radio show without looking in the face of the person you're talking to.
Yeah. But let me ask you this, for reals, guys. I have some serious questions. I know you guys are yucking it up and all. Let's make Bean feel bad. But let me ask you a couple of
serious questions. I don't want to make you feel bad. I'm
serious, though.
I want to make him feel bad.
Let me ask. Did Mark Maron, who, by the way, I am a huge fan of.
Just making it worse.
He comes in and does our show two or three times a year, and I always am excited, and I always look forward to it, and I always really try hard to make it a good experience for him and hope that he enjoys it. Is he driving away from K-Rock every time he visits just miserable
because
he had to suffer through our show, and that's why he wrote this episode?
No. It's just a...
Truth, Bob.
He doesn't have an axe to grind, and it really was, if you want to know the truth, it won't make for funny radio, but I think it really had to do with how uncomfortable it is to be being interviewed and no one's in the room. I think that had to do with it.
Yeah.
What we do every day.
That sounds good?
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, that's good. I buy it.
And I'll tell you the other thing that makes me worry, and Ralph, you know this. This is true.
This is great. But nothing, Bean cares about nothing.
Oh, he's going to spit out so hard now.
But radio. So now that it's like creeping into his sphere of reference, he's getting wigged out.
But here's why. Look, some people have never believed the story that I moved to Seattle in 1999 because I didn't like living in Los Angeles.
Right.
Some people have never accepted that it didn't have anything to do with the job. It didn't have anything to do with Kevin. It didn't have anything to do with anything else except for the fact that it wasn't my jam living in that place. It was too hot for me. There's too much traffic for me. I just it wasn't a good fit.
Look, I've had plenty times where I'm in a work environment and I don't really like the people, and I understand.
That's not what I'm saying.
Where you're coming from.
What I'm saying is now
that
I feel like
a lot. Right.
But now I feel like this is just going to add fuel to the fire, and that for the rest of the time we do this show, more and more people are going to say to me, "Oh, so you guys hate each other? Oh, you guys can't stand to be." And it has that's nothing could be.
Yeah, but how
from
often? Is
you
that,
guys are the best of friends.
But how often does that come up in Seattle?
No, but because of this show, and you know, we just did Acoustic Christmas, for instance, a couple weekends ago.
Okay, so once a year.
We met hundreds of fans, and I got asked several times, dude, what's wrong with you and Kevin? Why don't you guys do funk? And I'm like, that's nothing to do with this at all.
I don't think this will add, you know, I think it. Yeah, it's gonna. Yeah, 100%.
Look, so, Ralph, you couldn't wait to be in this episode.
I couldn't even see it.
I couldn't stop giggling during the performance.
He had to wear lead pants.
We had to do many takes because I kept
shrieking
with glee.
But it was funny, though. How many times did I
get along fine, right?
How many times did I pitch changing it to you?
He did. He kept saying, you know, if you're uncomfortable with this, we can easily change the city. Or I was like, no way! We're absolutely keeping this. This is the best!
I thought you guys were my friends.
Yeah, well.
Well, I had your back. Ralph really insisted.
I said, listeners will get a kick out of this when they watch the episode.
Yeah,
they're
and
get a
you
kick
know what? I
this.
Think your imagination is making it way worse.
Absolutely.
It's not a hatchet job.
No.
Okay. All right. The Marin series is coming back, what, in the spring or something on
Yeah, I believe so.
IFC, right?
Yeah, IFC.
So we'll look for that episode.
It's a very funny episode. You will really enjoy it when you watch
Bobcat Goldthwait is here on The Kevin DeBean Show. He's playing the Brea Improv the weekend of Friday, January 3rd, but tickets are on sale now already. If you want to make plans for post New Year's Eve, it's brea.improv.com. When we come back, Bob, we want to talk about why you've been spending so much time with Bigfoot.
Sure.
Right after this on K-Rock. Hey, Bobcat Goldthwait?
Yes, the pig?
Please, just being.
Why don't we just let it go?
This time of year, do a lot of people come up because they've just seen you on their TV in Scrooge?
Yeah,
recognized a lot this time of year.
Yeah, to the point where it's like, I saw you in Scrooge. You know, I finish it for
you.
Yeah.
You know what's coming.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. It doesn't bother me, but yeah, it's some of my finest acting. I was really close to coming in here while Santa Carl was and have a guest. 80s Bobcat was going to come by. I don't know if I've ever told this story, and I don't even know. I don't know if Jimmy knows this story, but when I was directing the Kimmel show, I don't know if I told this, Nickelback was on. And they might be very nice guys. I don't know the Nickelbacks, but I was in the booth and their road manager or manager came in where I would direct the show from. And he goes, don't shoot Chad profile. Only shoot him straight on. And I had to find out. That's the lead singer, you know. And I was like, oh, okay. And I go, why? He goes, because of his nose. I go, all right. So the cameraman, who could all hear this, started busting my chops. Hey, can I direct the show tomorrow? You know, and they're really giving it to me pretty hard. So if you see the Kimmel show, the last song from the band plays off before we go off the air. And I said to the assistant director, I go, tell me when we have 10 seconds left. And she goes, okay. And I go, shoot the nose. And seven cameras snap zoomed in on this guy's nose. And I made a nose montage. Like, ready, seven, ready, four, ready, six, two, one, three, five. And it was just a da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And then it got dead silent. And the guy's going, hey, man, what are we going to do now? I go, I'm getting in my car.
So that was you striking back at the pain that Nickelback had inflicted on the rest of the world.
No, I don't have a beef with Nickelback, but I'm not
told how to do a show.
Yeah, I was like a little, you know, I remember once, I think Nikki Sixx wasn't happy about something, and his manager came in the booth, and he goes, I'm putting you on the phone with the director, Bobcat Goldthwait. No. Yeah, no. Yeah, the same guy. Really? And then he hands me the phone. And I go, hi, Nikki. I go, well, I'm sorry. You're disappointed. You know what? I was going to have the elephant doors open, and then you guys would just appear there in silhouette, and there would be backlit and smoke, and that's how we were going to introduce you. And he goes, yeah. And I go, and we have Wagner playing. He's like, Wagner. I go, you know, Apocalypse Now. Da, 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 da. He goes, yeah. So I hand the phone back, and he was happy. And the manager goes, why didn't you tell us that before? I go, because I just came up with it. So that was my job on the Kimmel Show.
Placate.
Or, yeah, it was very, yeah.
And then you left the Kimmel Show, and you've been doing a lot of directing, a lot of stand-up, a lot of acting. And now you're making another movie. And this one, is this possible this is the weirdest movie you've ever made? And that's saying something.
No, I don't think so. I think this is a little bit more accessible, actually, a Bigfoot movie from me. Yeah, I mean, come on. I shot a baby, spoiler alert, in God Bless America. Yeah. So,
by the way, and just to interrupt, if you haven't seen that film, do yourself a favor and get that. It's still one of my favorite films.
Oh, thanks.
Joel Murray's performance in that is just outstanding, and the whole movie is just great.
Oh, thanks. So,
and I never should have said this was the weirdest because I had forgotten about Sleeping Dogs Lie.
A romantic comedy with a tasteful amount of bestiality. So,
exactly.
You know, but although, yeah, maybe the end is weird in this one. Yeah, okay. So it is a Bigfoot movie. It is the much dreaded found footage movie, but I'm not even a fan of found footage, but I just felt that the story lended itself to it. Because found footage, it's always like, who found this footage, you know? Who said, hey, I'm sorry your daughter got raped to death, but I think if we re-edit this, we could have a tremendous picture, you know? So she would have wanted it that way.
Where are you coming at Bigfoot from, Bobcat?
Are you making this movie? Yeah. It's not cynical. Like, I think people think I was going to make a snarky movie, but when I started hanging around the Bigfoot community, as far as like sub-genre, subgroups, and people have patience for them, people go, hey, what are you guys all about? It really goes like Comic-Con folks, then Ren Faire folks, Al-Qaeda, then Bigfoot people. You know what I mean? That's hey, tell me more about your group. So when I met these folks, I didn't really want to take them down. You know, I am a weirdo. I'm an outcast, so I wasn't going to do that. You know, I went to conventions where, like, most squatchers believe that Bigfoot has a pointy head, that he doesn't have a flat head. And because the pointy head, that's Steven Spielberg BS. So, this guy had a cardboard cutout at the convention of a pointy-headed Bigfoot, and this one guy walks over and he goes, you disgust me. And he goes, what? He goes, look at that head. And so he goes, really? I've seen Bigfoot 3 times, and you're never going to see him because you smoke. And then before the keynote speaker, this one guy came up and started talking about UFOs, and about a fourth of the room went, oh, boy.
Those people.
Who brought this wing nut? We're trying to talk about Bigfoot?
Trying to talk about real things here? Not
yeah,
aliens.
Please. Not about little green men.
Thank you.
But it sounded to me, Bob, when we were talking off air, that this goes beyond, hey, I'm making a movie.
Oh,
it sounds to me like you've started to bond with some of these people, and you're spending some of your personal time in the woods now looking for fur.
Sure. I just went camping with a guy who's in the movie, Tommy Amarone, who's the Bigfoot Bob Dylan. He writes music that's centric to the Bigfoot history.
Uh-huh.
And we were out in the woods recently. Now, you got to understand, this is 11 hours north of here. And then you get to get to Bluff Creek, it's 2.5 hours down a 17-mile dirt road. So it is remote. I mean, there's the nearest town is another 50 minutes away. And it's got, you know, I think under 2,000 people. I'm out in the middle of nowhere. And while we were making the movie, we saw two mountain lions.
Ooh.
So it's, you know, and then, oh, you know, so we put bacon on the fire. You know why? Bigfoot likes bacon.
Sure.
You know who else likes bacon? Bears. Bears
oh,
like
no.
bacon. No, so we got, so we put, but, so Tom, when it was really great the other last time I went out, because when we were sitting around the campfire and he ran out of Bigfoot songs, and guess what he sang? Jewel. Just did a couple Jewel numbers around the campfire.
I would not have guessed that.
I would have not seen that coming.
He breaks into I Was Meant for You.
Yeah.
And you're out in the middle of nowhere, Bob. I would get a little nervous, I would think.
I did. And then Bigfoot's harmonizing the back. No, that did come up when we were making the movie because I was out with a couple of the Bigfoot guys and there was two women with us, Alexi Gilmore, who stars in it, and my friend Amy, and it's about 3-4 a.m. and they go, we never had women here before. And I go, I'm going to stop you right now. That's usually when the raping starts. And they didn't laugh. But my favorite thing was is it is in a scary way you are. And like I said, we had seen mountain lions. So I'm sitting there, and one of the guys, Ranger Robert, he's like, I'm a writer too. I go, oh, really? What do you write? He goes, you know Twilight? I was like, yeah, we all know Twilight. You know, sure. Well, I write tween fiction like Twilight set in the Bigfoot community. Uh-huh. And I go, and by the way, I'm not lying. I go, oh, I go, what's the name of your book? He goes, well, the first one's Yeti or Not. It's a coming of age story.
I think you just found your sequel, Bob.
Yeah.
Here I come.
But Willow Creek is a scary movie, and it'll come out in March. And I've just been around the world and at different horror film festivals.
So it's done.
All over. Oh yeah, yeah. I'm still cleaning up a little bit, but it's it's done.
What's the reaction been overall?
Folks seem to like it. I found out that comedy and scaring people are super similar. You know, I mean, you give them misdirect and then you scare them. But the thing people seem to gravitate in this movie they like is there's a 19 minute take that doesn't break and there's no cutaways and it's super uncomfortable. You know, so there's screams. It's kind of funny. You know, I remember the first time I saw it with a crowd and it sounds racist, but I was so happy. There's this black guy in front of me. I mean, at one point, there's a twist in the thing, and he goes, uh-huh, Bigfoot, really loud. And I was like, yeah, I'm home, I did it, you know, so, Bigfoot.
Let us know when that comes out and when we can see it, because
sure.
That sounds like a lot of fun, Bob, it really does. All right, I can't believe we're out of time. Hey, Ralph, should we say goodbye to Bob? Or you want Bob to stick around for the showbiz?
No, stick around here in Pete and the Pig. We got some showbiz news coming up next. Love to have comedian Bobcat Goldthwait sticking around.
What's up with Miley Cyrus?
That kid is crazy.
He's just stewing.
He's just not happy.
I'm actually just waiting for Beer Mug to hit the goddamn button. This is fascinating, by the way, and I got to tell you about this real quick because this is really going to drive the anti-gun people crazy, the people who are really worried about the weapons and why does anybody need a shotgun with that much power. Dateline Brisbane, Australia, there's a gun that fires a million rounds a minute.
No.
How is that even physically
Wouldn't it
possible?
Just burn up? I mean, the heat that would generate would be unbelievable.
Well, I knew that you guys would have questions, and that's why
million.
I asked.
A million?
I asked producer Lightning to light us up a gun expert, and I think Mr. Chuck Heston is on the phone, former president of the National Rifle Association and a good friend of the Kevin Bean Show. Good morning, Chuck. How are you?
Good day, mates.
Oh, yeah, sure. Good day to you, too. Now you're living in Australia now that you heard about this, the metal storm, it's called.
Throw another communist on the barbie.
Now, Chuck, you know a lot more about guns than we do. What can you tell us about this device? How does it work? Like, how is it feasible to shoot a million rounds a minute?
The genius behind the metal storm has taken out all the mechanics and completely substituted it with electronics.
So it's like they use computer technology, just like we do in chips, to make things go faster and faster and smaller. And they can not only shoot bullets, they can shoot grenades, they can shoot
rockets,
anything they want, right?
Grenades, shotguns, handguns, machine guns. They can throw up a veil of bullets dense enough to stop an incoming missile.
Really?
It's beautiful!
This is frightening.
God, I love it so!
Poor Chuck is like 80 years old. This is the first erection he's gotten in a half a century when he heard about this weapon.
I can finally go in peace. Now, knowing that I leave behind a weapon of mass destruction that can fire 1 million rounds per minute! Damn you! What the hell?
Are you in Australia now, and have you seen this weapon?
Seen it. I own three.
You have three metal storms?
Yes.
Chuck,
no,
you're not...
firing mechanism whatsoever. An electrical impulse fires the powder, and the beautiful projectile comes out and pierces your very flesh.
All right, now here's the thing that a lot of people would raise, and I think it's legitimate, Chuck. You're not the U.S. military. You're not at war in Baghdad. Why do you, a private citizen, need a weapon like this?
What happens if my home one night is invaded by 4,000 troops? Well, then, I have a right to protect myself.
Then you have a lot of trouble, Chuck.
What if the Sandinistas come to get me?
They're not going to come to your house, Chuck.
The Sandinistas don't care about you.
What if the Liberian insurgency stretches all the way to Brentwood? What then, you bastard?
I don't think...
Get your paws off me, you dirty Liberian!
But, Chuck, seriously, wouldn't just a regular machine gun be enough to cut down anyone who tries to get in your door? Do you really need a million rounds?
Oh, jeez, Chuck. No, Chuck, don't shoot any. Don't fire it. Chuck, wow. That is a weapon. Chuck, is there anyone around? Are you hitting anything? Chuck! This is a guy with Alzheimer's, by the way, that we're giving this weapon to. Is that a good idea?
Chuck,
we have to go!
Hello!
Chuck! Come back to us! All right. Chuck!
Damn, I missed it.
Having bands stop by the studio is fun. It's great to enjoy live music in the morning. Not so great for the bands that have to perform that live music, though. That's what I've learned. Ladies and gentlemen, the Lumineers are here. Wesley, Jeremiah, Nayla. Hi, you guys. Welcome.
Thanks for having us.
Good morning.
Your first time here to K-Rock that I know of. It's great to see you. I apologize that it is so early, but how are you feeling?
Pretty peppy.
I can tell.
Pretty peppy?
I've been up.
Nayla, you sound awfully peppy. You sound like you're bouncing off the walls.
Yep, you know it.
Two sold-out shows at the Fonda. You're selling out a lot of places on this tour. That has to be a little bit of a surprise, right?
Yeah, definitely a big surprise. We were playing to some pretty empty rooms not very long ago. So yeah.
How long ago?
Maybe 6 months or so.
Yeah.
How empty?
Last 2 years.
More band members on stage than audience.
Than audience?
That's
oh,
rough.
That sucks.
Pretty empty.
So then one of you would take a break and go down and applaud and go back up and play?
Yeah. Builds character.
That's tough.
Tell Kevin and Bean listeners who maybe don't know much about the Lumineers besides the song they've been hearing on K-Rock a little bit about the history of the band. Is it true that, Nayla, you came in through a Craigslist ad? Because I didn't think anything good ever came out of Craigslist. I thought that was only a recipe to get robbed.
Yeah. No, it's true. They had placed a Craigslist ad that I bravely answered. And it worked out.
Did you think for a second that it would work out, or did you just go, it's worth a try?
Not
I might
really.
As well just give it a shot.
Yeah, I was just kind of bored and looking for something to do, and so.
I don't know. I mean, look, I know Craigslist is the classifieds of the 21st century, but if I were you answering that ad, I would just expect to be duct taped in the back of someone's trunk.
Well, I did. We met in the middle of the day, and I let a lot of people know where I was going.
Good. So. Did you bring a knife?
Might have.
If we wanted to kill her, we could have. Instead, we practiced Charlie Boy, and she played the cello. And
it was a basement. It was dark.
Yeah.
Who placed the Craigslist ad that found Nayla?
Jeremiah and me, Wesley.
Okay, and you guys specifically were looking for a cello player?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yes. Specifically Nayla. She just didn't know it yet.
Tell me why, when you've got two guys and you're looking for a third person for your band, you choose the cello as the one instrument that's missing.
We're very sensitive.
Very sensitive.
Yeah. I think we had just moved from New York, and we were looking for a change in our sound, and as we started making new songs for this record that turned out to be this EP we were making. We heard cello in our heads, so we started putting on a record, but it was really cheesy.
The bass. We hated electric bass, and upright was too big to travel with, so cello seemed like a good fit.
Nice.
It's not something that people are looking for every day either.
Nope.
I'm sure you didn't have to go through 100 different ads on Craigslist.
No.
Celloist wanted.
Yeah.
So when you guys met and personality clicked and musically, obviously it was a good fit as well. Did it take very long from that moment before it started to really gel and you guys thought, hey, this is it. This is what we've been waiting for.
I think it took a little while. I mean, like we said, we played a lot of rooms that weren't exactly packed. But I think we also felt like even in the house shows or the small bars, we got a certain response and we're connecting with people and it made us want to keep doing it. So it kept us going. For those times that I think it's exaggerated, we weren't playing in empty rooms until
like 10
last
people.
6 months ago, but it certainly feels like overnight sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, when you're working your ass off and then everybody goes, hey, you exist. Yeah. It must feel like it's overnight.
So what's it like now that you have this album that has sold a lot of copies and you're getting a lot of radio play? Do you feel like you're overextended now? Like people are always asking you to do too much? Every day is too busy?
We're pretty busy, yeah.
Yeah, I think someone yes. once told us they'd probably, if you do well, you'll have to say no more than yes. So we're learning the things that we can do without stretching ourselves too thin.
Right.
You know, we have a show tonight, and hopefully the vocal cords hold up.
Now, let's talk about that for a second. You lost your vocal cords one other time.
Yeah, we were at South by Southwest, and we played probably a dozen shows in a three-day span, and we played around 7:30 a.m. to a bunch of people in a big room.
Let me look at the clock. 7:28.
Yeah.
All right, good.
It's lining up just perfectly.
That's good.
I think I blew it out on the first song, and then.
But don't do that because then people tonight will blame us.
But I warmed up this time.
You did, okay.
So that's probably good. Yeah, I was
very
sick.
Do you need any help on the hose and the haze, or do you guys have that down at this point? Because we do have extra bodies standing around if you need some assistance.
Sure,
if you guys know the song.
I'm not much of a hay guy, but I'm good with hose.
You're excellent with hose, guys. That's actually true.
I'll take all the help we can get. Yeah.
Is it true, Neela? I think it was you who said on an interview that there was some discussion about the ho-hay part of that ho-hay song, that it was like, is this too much? Is this overdoing it? Well, tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, there was a debate about putting the hose and haze in the song.
Yeah.
You want to talk about that, Jerry?
Yeah, I think we were recording it in our little home studio in Denver. We had the hose and haze in it, and then we thought it might be annoying, or, you know, if we wanted people to listen to the song again, you know, it might be cool the first time, but not cool the second time.
Right.
And it was one of those things that really worked and always killed live. It was sort of our secret weapon. That's what we thought of it, at least. And
so you would just hang, as the show was going along, if you finally needed that big boost, that was the one you went to?
Yeah, if you wanted people to kind of shut up, if you wanted to get in their grill, get in their space, we'd go out into the audience and kind of make people listen, kind of force them, hold them hostage a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes you find that things that work live don't necessarily translate into a studio environment. So
sure.
Once we got it down though sonically, we thought it sounded great, and we didn't expect it to be a single though, like it's become. I mean, that's
right.
Certainly a surprise.
Oh, isn't that interesting?
Internally, we thought it was a great song, but I don't think any of us thought this, you know, I mean, it resonated with us, and that's all that we really cared about, selfishly.
Interesting.
But it's impressive that where it's gone.
The album is called The Lumineers. It's just called The Lumineers?
Yeah.
Is that the name of it?
Not just, yeah. It's The Lumineers.
That would have been better, actually, just Lumineers.
Just The Lumineers.
Anytime I see someone who doesn't bother to name their debut album, I think, I don't know. I got questions about these guys, but it's working out for you. The Lumineers is the name of the band. It's the name of the album, and it's how you follow them on Twitter. The website is thelumineers.com. Wesley, Jeremiah, and Neela are all here this morning. You guys are going to go into the next room, and you're going to attempt to sing for us. And I'm very excited, and we thank you for being here.
Thanks for having us.
K-Rock's Kevin is on the other side of the glass right now with a band called The Lumineers in town for two sold-out shows at the Fonda Theater. Kevin, you helping out here? What are you doing? What's the deal?
I'm on the other side of the glass, so I have to put them on it?
You don't have to put them on the glass, okay. No.
All right. I don't know.
What's the setup like? What's it look like where you are?
There's a band here. There's a bass drum. I see a guitar, and I see a cello.
Okay. Sounds like they have everything they need to make Lumineers music.
They're
Let's
ready to
hear
go.
What that sounds like.
Live music from The Lumineers.
I've been trying to do it right.
Hey!
I've been living a lonely life.
Ho!
I've been sleeping here instead.
Hey!
I've been sleeping in my bed.
Ho!
I've been sleeping in my bed.
Hey!
Ho! So show me family.
Ho!
All the blood that I will bleed. I don't know where I belong.
Oh.
I don't know where I went wrong.
Hey.
But I can write a song.
Oh.
I belong with you. You belong with me, my sweetheart. I belong with you. You belong with me, my sweetheart.
belong with you. You belong with me, my sweet. I belong with you. You belong with me, my sweet. Oh, we need it now. Let's go. I belong with you, you belong with me, my sweet. Ho! Hey! Ho! Hey!
Come on, how about that? Move me.
Ouch. What was that?
What was that?
Did you guys hear that?
I have no idea what that was.
Weird.
Damn.
We didn't blow out any voices there. You guys still feeling all right? It sounded great.
Bean wants to know if you guys are feeling all right. They can't hear you, Bean.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry.
Feeling good.
I was worried about them blowing out their voices at the 7:30 a.m. thing, but it sounded like they kept it under control there. That was awesome.
They're feeling good. Another song?
Sure.
Yeah. Lumineers, live music on the world famous K-Rock.
And steal and cheat, beg you from her knees, make you think she means it this time. She'll tear a hole in you, the one you can't repair. But I still love her. We did enough. When it got cold, we bundled up. I can't be told, I can't be done. It's better to feel pain than nothing at all. The opposite of love. Attention now, oh, standing on your porch, screaming out, and I won't leave until you come downstairs. So keep your head up. love. Get up, my love.
There you go, live music awesome. From the Lumineers.
How about that?
How about that?
They needed that cello. That was a good choice, actually. Wesley, Jeremiah, Nayla in studio here on the Kevin Amin Show. The Lumineers debut album is out now, playing the Fonda. Two sold-out shows tonight and tomorrow night. Thanks, you guys. So great of you to come by.
Thanks for coming in.
Thanks, K-Rock.
Hey, when do you have to pay Dave the King of Mexico with your Clippers-Lakers credits bet?
Maybe Monday. We'll see.
It's when
it's gonna happen. You could have paid Clippers any time in the past 6 months.
It's gonna
happen. But I'm way ahead on those.
Oh
guys,
yeah, so. Of course you are. Yeah, yeah. Well, the reason I ask is because we are talking to Matt Barnes from the Los Angeles Clippers coming up in about 20 minutes or so here on the Kevin Beach. I just want to make sure that there wasn't going to be any ugliness with the man on the phone.
No.
I want to make sure you guys all have all your business taken care of here in the office.
Well, I'm going to ask him to throw it, but I think that's
they've
cool.
already achieved the largest number of wins ever in the season for the Clippers.
Wow.
Yeah, already. Yeah.
That's impressive. All right, you're listening to the Kevin Amin Show here on a Friday. Thanks so much for tuning in. Keep listening for your Depeche Mode tickets and April Foolishness tickets up close coming up later on. But, Ralph, I'm glad you're here because you brought up what sounded like a fascinating study in the office the other day, but I want to hear more about it. What you got?
Yeah, it was a study from the University of Westminster, and they published in the Archives of Sexual Behavior, a journal in February, that they claim the more sexist a man is, the more likely he is to be into big boobs. That male attitudes towards women may predict breast size preference. If you find a guy as being even what they call benevolently sexist, meaning that he thinks women are, meek and weak and the weaker sex and have more idealized traditional views of femininity, that the more likely that person is to be sexually attracted to large breasts versus what they think is a more progressive man would be more attracted to medium to small size breasts.
Hmm.
Which is this study is so dumb, it must have been done by a woman. That's the only thing I can imagine.
And set.
They interviewed 361 white heterosexual men ranging at ages from 18 to 68. And I'm curious, Ralph, how do you measure how sexist a man is? Does it say?
Well, what they would do is interview them about their views of women and women's role in society. They would get that as a baseline. And then they would show these same men 3D models of women, so as not to influence them with hair color or ethnicity or anything else. These are just generic forms of a woman, a 3D form of a woman. And then they would ask them to rank in order of attractiveness which model they were most attracted to. 5 different breast sizes, and then they would record which woman he found most physically attractive. And then they would compare the two sets of data, and then they would come up with this correlation between sexism and breast size.
I should have done that study in college. Sounds like some fun study.
Dumb, because everyone loves big boobs. So this is a dumb study.
Well, not everyone loves big boobs. I mean, it depends.
Everyone loves big boobs.
It depends on the frame of the woman.
Right. Heterosexual men love big boobs.
What I'm saying, I'll give you a perfect example. Natalie Portman.
Yes.
Beautiful.
Right.
Just like she
is. She's a 9.5, and she'd be a 10 if she had bigger boobs. Everyone knows that.
How did the percentages fall in terms of breast size preference, Ralph?
All right. The largest percentage of participants said that medium-sized breasts were most attractive. That came in at 32.7%.
Medium,
so
okay.
The majority of men said medium-sized breasts are the best. Next was 24.4% of the men, so a quarter practically of the men, said large breasts are most attractive.
Okay.
Very large breasts, 20%, 19.1% of the men said very large breasts are most attractive. Small breasts, 15.5% of men said small breasts are the most attractive. And very small, 8.3% of the men lied and said very small breasts are most sexually attractive.
It's a weird study because it. I mean, it, everybody likes to look at big boobs. Everybody.
Yes, yes, sure. Lisa,
right?
Yes.
So if that's the actual question, then it's a dumb study because everybody likes that. I don't know how looking at a model is going to play out in your actual life. Does that mean that these men reject women with medium-sized breasts if they like them because their boobs aren't big enough? I doubt it.
No, they'll throw a favor
to a
girl with small breasts. They'll do her a favor and, you know, help her out.
I think the whole thing is ridiculous.
But the sexual ideal for these men who were asked in this and participated in this study said that that's how it broke down, is that the ones who said that very large and large breasts were the most sexually attractive, those men had a certain level of sexism versus the men who said very small breasts or small breasts were most sexually attractive. Apparently, they say there's some sort of correlation between how a man looks at a large-breasted woman and lusts after her in comparison to how he objectifies women, perhaps.
What's interesting, Ralph, about the numbers that you gave is if you add up the percentage that preferred large and very large, put those together, by my math, it's at 45%. So that's already almost half are saying large breasts,
right.
Basically.
Exactly. Then medium-sized breasts, add another 32.7%. That's practically everybody.
Right.
And then you got
everyone who counts.
With 15.5%. And then, of course, you have the gay men at 8.3% who said very small breasts are sexually attractive.
Uncool, not necessarily gay. There are blind people in the study,
That's
too.
That's true. I forgot. Yeah.
All right. So what are we looking for on the phone, sir? Because we did carve out some time to get some reaction to this. Are we looking for the roughly 23% of men who prefer small breasts? Is that what we're looking for?
Yes. Because I would like to, first of all, yell at them.
Okay.
But secondly,
for being wrong.
I can't wrap my head around that preference. I can't comprehend.
But I gave you a good example.
But I gave you a better example,
which is Natalie Portman.
If she had larger breasts, she'd be even hotter.
I don't think so. I think
so.
That's
so
not just wrong.
She's
wrong.
A small person.
Yes.
In a small package.
Yes.
And she's sexy.
But if
like
she had larger breasts that were attached to her small package, then she'd be even more attractive. That's just a given.
I think it's relative.
She shouldn't have I'm not saying she has to have massive breasts. Of course, that would look ridiculous on her frame. But if she had large, full breasts appropriately sized to her body, she would be even more attractive.
How can she? She's like 5 feet tall and 100 pounds. There
well,
is no
large. She's got, give her a little more. What's wrong with you? How is that so hard to understand?
I'm just saying, the woman makes the boobs sexy. The boobs aren't sexy by themselves.
That's
and
wrong, too.
I'd like to point out, Kevin, that you're arguing with Ralph, who has science on his side. He brought in the study, remember?
Let's just take personality out of it, Kevin, and line up five women against the wall. Why? You're going to get to know everybody in a room?
No, but I'm saying
five naked women against the wall. Look at the boobs. What do you find attractive? That's what we're talking about.
It depends on the size of the frame.
Natalie Portman to have dinner with her would be very attractive.
Yeah, we're not talking about dating. We're talking about physical attraction.
And I'm talking about the size of a woman's body.
All right, I got two words for you. Scarlett Johansson.
They look good on her.
That's what I'm saying.
Because her frame supports that.
Yeah.
I'm good with that.
I don't think she's that much larger than Natalie Portman is.
I think she is. She's quite a bit taller.
She's not 6 feet tall.
No, she's not. All right, we'll take some calls so you can yell at other people besides just me. 1-800-520-1067 is... Stop yelling at me.
Stop being dumb.
I can't. 106.7 K-Rock is KROQ. It is 25 minutes after 7 o'clock.
Talking to a Cocker Spaniel.
It's Kevin, a dumb study.
You can't fight science.
It's science, it's Lisa. Not, science is not dumb.
It is.
Welcome to the Kevin and Bean Show. If you're just joining us, you have missed Kevin being yelled at quite a bit because Ralph brought in a study that says, well, recap it for us in a sentence or two. Would you, Ralph?
The University of Westminster did a study with men, divorcing personality and body types beyond just breast size. No hair color, no ethnicity, no other reason you could decide whether you find a woman attractive or not. Based purely on breast size, they asked them what they found most sexually attractive. And it broke down that the largest percentage of men said medium-sized breasts were most attractive. 24.4% said large, 19.1% said very large, small went to 15.5%, and then the wrong people said 8.3% very small breasts were the most sexually attractive.
Now, what about small? Are they lying too? Or just extra small?
Small are just damaged.
Okay.
People said small damaged. The very smart people, they're lying. And they said there was a correlation between men who found very large, large breasts sexually attractive, that there was a correlation between how they objectified women and they had a certain amount of sexism in that group.
All right, we're going to take some phone calls at 1-800-520-1067. We're going to line one and Doug up first. Renee writes in, there was a study done a while back that also showed that the length of hair a man prefers that a woman has a direct correlation to how sexist he is. The longer the hair he preferred, the more sexist he was, which makes sense from an evolutionary standpoint. Cavemen would drag women around by the hair. Everyone knows boobs are awesome, even gay men like Jessica Simpson's dad. Hopeless Al, fire beer mug.
Yes.
So, all of the above is true.
Like one of those judges. If you see a woman who has a really short haircut and she looks beautiful, that's like the ultimate prize, because you know if you put good long hair on her, she'd be even hotter. But the fact that she can be hot with short hair is a remarkable achievement. That's what it is with small boobs. If a woman can look great with small boobs, it's a remarkable achievement, because if you put big boobs on her, she'd be even that much hotter.
It's science.
It's science.
Let's see what Doug has to say. I think he wants to dispute science, which is can't go well. But Doug, welcome to the Kevin Meacher. Thank you for calling.
Good morning, Kevin B and Lisa May. How you
doing?
Good
morning.
Good, thanks.
Hey, so I'm a small boob guy, and I got two reasons for that.
Okay.
I think that big boobs, they don't age well. That's number one.
That's true.
Well, don't date old women.
I don't think
that's the answer to that problem.
I don't think the study is taking into account a lifetime. They're just taking into account at this second when I look at it.
Yes.
Okay, well, regardless, number two is because with every big boob comes a big nipple.
That's just not true.
That's very true.
Except that it's not.
It's science.
All right, Doug, sorry.
Nipple sizes vary on all sizes. I've seen very small boobs with massive flapjack nipples. Nothing's more hideous. So, Doug, why don't you hang up and go be wrong somewhere else? Jesus.
All right, let's go to Trent. He's on line three. I think he also would like to lodge a complaint against the larger breasts.
Yes, Trent.
Morning, Kevin. Morning, Bean. Hi, Lisa.
Hello.
So my thing is, larger breasts are nice, but the problem with them is that they usually sag a bit more, and I don't find sag at all attractive.
You don't find natural attractive?
No, not at all.
All right.
But you're gay, right?
No.
You got that going for you.
I'm just checking.
It's science.
All right. I like small boobs, could look better on the runway. All right, Trent, take a walk. Why are you fighting with science?
Let's go to line two. This is going to be Jesse.
There's no time for it.
Well, because it's science.
It's science.
It is like they're arguing that the sun revolves around the earth, isn't it? I mean, there's no defense.
I like a flat planet because you can walk off the edge of it, and then you can get in a hot air balloon and go around the edges of the planet because the world is flat. That's what they're saying on the phone, basically.
Hi, Jesse.
Hello?
Help.
Hello?
Yeah, you're okay. Yes, we're waiting for you to talk.
Go ahead, brain surgeon. You tell us what your point of view is. Can't operate a phone, but he's going to tell me about boobs.
I don't like hanging big breasts. I like smaller breasts proportional to a girl's size, and I like smaller girls.
Smaller girls, smaller boobs. He's a fan of. You're calling him a liar.
No, I'm saying you can have a small girl with large breasts for her frame, and that looks dynamite. That's what I'm
saying. Wait, is dynamite science?
Dynamite is science.
It's science.
It is science.
Okay. All right, so we're just going to say Jesse is wrong and leave it there.
Yes. Well, listen to him. Hello? Hello? What end of this do I talk into? Hello?
Any words for Chris, who writes the Kevin Amin Twitter account? Kevin Amin are once again opining about how all real men prefer women with large breasts, and once again, I am waiting to punch my radio. What do you have for Chris, Ralph?
Punch away, son.
I don't know
what he wants from us. Yeah. Hope you break your radio in your hand.
Believe me when I tell you, you do not want to live next to Bean if you have animals.
Dude, this is one of the worst things that ever happened to me my whole life. Why must you hurt? So, guys, I got trouble in paradise.
What happened?
I got real problems here.
No, you don't. You got the greatest story ever.
Dude, you've always had problems. What's going on? You guys have been making fun of me for a long time because remember when I told you a few months ago that I had written to Dear Abby and you got all up in me because you thought no one ever writes to Dear Abby?
Yeah, of course. They're all fake. They're made up.
And 85-year-old women.
Yeah, too, right. Too.
Well, I wrote to Dear Abby because I've been having a problem in the neighborhood, and I don't know how many of our listeners will relate to this, but I got a neighbor who...
None.
Is the answer to that, but go ahead. Well, everybody's had a situation with noisy neighbors, right? That's not uncommon. Everybody's had someone. They're doing construction, or they play the music too loud, or they got motorcycles up and down the street or something like that.
But no one has your problem.
No, my specific problem is that my neighbor about a year and a half ago, I guess maybe, got a rooster. Now, they had chickens, and they, you know, a lot of people where I live, it's kind of rural, and they have, you know, have their chickens to make, lay eggs and, you know, that sort of thing. And he got a, they got a rooster. And I don't know how many people have ever lived next to a rooster, but you know how you hear, like in the movies, the rooster crows at sunbreak?
Yeah, sure.
You hear that sound, you go, well, that's kind of nice. It's kind of rural. It's kind of homey. That sounds good. Well,
sure.
What happens, unfortunately, with roosters is that that goes on for hour after hour after hour.
I mean, they don't like just do it right at 6 a.m. and stop?
I wish they did.
There's no snooze button on a rooster?
Like, it's not just during the morning either. I mean, they'll, you know, they're quiet a little bit midday, and then they come back in the afternoon. They crow for hours more. Now, what do you do if you're me in that situation? I live in an area that is rural. I mean, I've got farm animals. I've got cows and a donkey, and I've got pigs. I mean, one of the reasons people live in places like this is because they want to be able to have their barnyard, right? So they have every right in the world to have a rooster. But where does their right to have a rooster run up against my right to get a good night's sleep once in a while?
Of course. That would drive me nuts.
What do you do, Kevin, if you're me? What do you do in that situation?
Write Dear Abby. I go out and I would never, ever, ever think of writing Dear Abby. I would go out in dark clothing and kill their pet. You wouldn't.
That's not
a rooster.
That's not an option.
If I'm not sleeping...
So I did more than just write Dear Abby. I also have been in contact with the neighbors over the course of a year and a half.
Contact them and say, is there anything you can do?
Yeah, I said, look, I understand you're allowed to have this rooster, but I got to tell you, I'm not able to get any sleep. And of course, we have very hot summers up here with no air conditioning. If you have your windows open at all to try to catch a breeze or something like that, you're going to have trouble with the roosters. Obviously, doing this radio show in the morning, I can't have the windows or the doors open as long as you've got the rooster because the thing just makes too much noise all the time.
Right.
I understand if it's a pet, but is there anything you can do? Can you move it further away? Can we relocate the rooster to someone else's house and we'll buy you eggs for life? Please work with me here, right?
And you weren't darts. That was the answer. And you weren't angry at that point, right? You were just
absolutely
asking.
But how long you been asking and writing and contacting them, though?
It's been about 6 months, probably. And every time I hear from them, every time I speak with them about them or leave them a note, and then, you know, and then they call me, they go, yeah, we understand your concerns. We're taking it seriously. We're going to work on it. We're going to come up with some sort of a plan. Thank you for contacting. Sorry about you. So they seem really nice about it, okay?
Right.
It just was driving me crazy to the point. I mean, this rooster for like 20 hours straight was, you know. Okay.
You're going to come around to my way of thinking.
Bean's starting to write notes on rocks and throw him through the window.
So I wrote another note that was just cranked up just a little bit more.
Just a notch.
Just a notch. And it basically said, look, we've had this conversation for many, many months now. Please just let me know if you're not going to do anything about the rooster, and I won't continue to get my hopes up, and I promise I'll never say anything about it again, but just tell me that you're happy where the rooster is and that basically F off, okay? Basically just let me know so that I don't worry about it.
Okay.
So that's the note I left. So I get a call from my wife, and she says, you're not going to believe this, but the rooster's gone. Oh, my God, that's the best news ever. She said, yeah, it's so fantastic. I guess you wrote this new note. And I said, yeah, I wrote this new note. She says they must have taken the rooster over to the animal park or wherever it is they go, you know, where they send the rooster or something like that, just like you've been asking. It's fantastic. So my wife got this this basket of, like, bread and cookies and took it over and left it on their porch. And thank you so much for being so considering. We hope the rooster has a fantastic home
that's
and a happy
great.
Life. And it's so sweet. So we felt really good about it. And then she ran into my next-door neighbor at the hardware store later that same day.
Right.
And she said, oh, did you get the basket? The neighbor said, yeah, it was so thoughtful. Oh, we're just so happy that it worked out. We felt really bad. We love animals so much. We really felt bad to even say anything, but thank you so much for the help. You know, I hope the rooster's going to be very, very happy. And she said, the neighbor says, what do you mean? And she says, well, I mean, I hope the place that you took the rooster, that rooster's going to have a happy life, maybe a place where it's not going to be bothering anybody, but it's going to enjoy.
Right.
She's like, no, you don't understand. You asked us to take care of the rooster. Donna says, yeah, we wanted you to take care of it because of the... She said, no, we took care of the rooster. And then she makes the little Indian chop, the little tomahawk chop like this, you know. And the neighbor's got her daughter with her, like a 13-year-old or something like that. And she's like, we'll talk about it later, but it's all good. We took care of the rooster.
They cut off the rooster's head?
Yes.
Nice!
Awesome. They went out and they chopped the rooster's head off. And my wife, now I'm really upset about this. We laugh and stuff, but
that's
really
best case scenario.
In a million years, my intent was not for them
so
to kill
what?
Their pet.
I want it quiet now.
That's part of the point, but that's not the whole point. I thought they'd take this rooster to a sanctuary somewhere or give it away to somebody who's got more land where the rooster could live and be a rooster.
Rooster Lake. What's a Rooster Lake?
I didn't want Rooster Lake. Now, Donna did everything but burst out in tears in the hardware store when she heard this. And when she called me, she called me after the meeting, she's like, "You're not going to believe it. I can't. They killed the rooster." And I was like, "Oh my God!" I felt so bad. So now I'm the pet killer in the neighborhood.
You put a contract out on the rooster.
That's how I feel.
Awesome.
We take care of the rooster, Mr. Baxter. Don't worry about it.
So now every time I go outside or I have my door open, I hear the silence. It almost makes me cry. Like, I'd give anything to hear that little rooster again.
The silence of death.
That's exactly
the sweet, sweet silence of death.
Rooster killer. You're a rooster killer.
How does that make you feel?
I couldn't feel any worse, frankly. I wish I'd never said a word.
For
I wish I'd never called them.
Yeah, no, for being of all people.
To cause the death of a rooster is the best thing ever.
Did you talk to them and say, this is the biggest misunderstanding ever? Did you say that to them?
What, after I found out the rooster was dead?
Yeah.
I haven't spoken to them since. I only heard Donna talk to him
at
the hardware store.
Well, they're next-door neighbors, for God's sake.
You're not going to go say that to them.
What am I going to say? I can't go over there now and go, "We didn't mean for you to kill the rooster."
I was just kidding. Here's the thing, though. They're your next-door neighbors. You don't have to wait to run into them at the store.
I don't know what to tell you, but I'm not going to go over there now.
I apologize. If you thought that's what I wanted, you know, I'm really sorry.
Well, I will have that conversation.
By the way, your daughter's been awfully loud lately.
We can open up the phone lines right now, by the way, if you want to be part of a Kevin and Bean scientific survey. We're looking for people. We can't tell you what the topic is because we don't want you to have an opinion before you call. We'll explain it on the air in a couple of minutes. 1-800-520-1067. We'll put you on hold for a few minutes, then we'll talk to you coming up. First, let's do this.
Would you like to take that back?
Hey!
First, let's do this.
Would you like to take that back? Would you like to take that back? Tell me, would you take that back? Would you like to take that back? Would you like to take that back? Tell me, would you take that back?
Don't be skimping on the theme song.
Yeah, really.
Our favorite part of the bit.
I'd like to take back screwing up the theme song, by the way.
All right, put that in the file for next time.
All right. First clip is Ralph doing showbiz.
Nope.
And he's doing the birthdays, and Bean is fresh from vacation, just came back.
Tanned, rested, and ready.
And must immediately force his way right into the file.
Today's celebrity birthdays, rapper M.I.A. turns 38 years
old.
Does
anyone know where she is?
Wow!
But I've just...
He's back from vacation already. He's just
file.
He's just got a crowbar and he's just prying the file open so he can stuff his jokes in here.
Understand the joke. It's just terrible.
You guys don't get it.
Would you like to take that back?
We get it. Wow. We are not fans.
We get it all too well, Seth.
Would you like to take that back?
That's the question. The question is, would you like to take that back? Hells no. Are you kidding me? I love that one. Her name is M.I.A.
Right, we
you
get
still
that.
Still don't get it.
We got it the first time. We don't find it funny.
Nope.
Would you like to take that back?
Wow.
All right, Ralph is doing birthdays again, and he's talking about Tina Turner, and this is Dean.
Another showbiz news, congratulations to Tina Turner. She got married last weekend at the age of 73.
This is my least favorite kind because Bean has to get somebody else's participation to get the joke out.
Yeah.
So he forces Ralph to answer his question.
You have a question, Bean?
Well, I did. I don't want to screw up your joke.
Oh, but. Since when?
Do you think that Tina Turner loves her new husband?
Oh, I don't even know where this is going, but I know it's not going to pay off.
I think he's expecting to say, "What's love got to do with it?"
Yay! Thank you very much.
Would you like to take that back?
Come on.
Yeah, I'll take that.
All right, good.
All right. That was pretty sloppy.
Am I absolved then as an accomplice? Do I also get off the hook if he takes that back?
You are absolved as the accomplice, yes.
You only opened the safe because I had a gun to your head.
That's right.
You're
absolutely under duress.
You're completely blameless.
However, now Bean has left the bank and you're holding the gun.
What? Apparently at the wedding they will be doing the dollar dance where you get to dance with the bride. She will be a private dancer, a dancer for money.
Boom!
at the ceremony.
See what he did there?
He's so excited.
Come on, Kevin. We don't need another hero. You don't have to join in and try to play.
F you. Both.
Would you like to take that back?
Come on. No way.
What?
That was awesome.
Would you like to take that back?
No. I'm laughing now. Hearing it again. You're laughing too, by the way.
I'm laughing. You're laughing. All right. So Ralph's doing the showbiz, and he's talking about Sam Worthington. Of course, Bean can't resist.
Sam Worthington has got that new movie Drift out today about Australian surfing. He is 37 years old.
Is his dog Spot in it?
Put that in the file with prejudice.
Would you like to take that back?
There was
would
a guy
like
for years.
Would you like to take that back?
It's a car dealer.
Would you like to take that
commercials.
We get
dog.
It.
Look, very rarely is somebody named Worthington in the news. I gotta go.
Does
for it
make that joke funny?
Itself.
No, you
no.
don't.
I'm not taking it back.
You
I'm not taking
are
it back.
Bad on every level.
Spot and I will be right over here being very happy with that.
All right, so Ralph's talking about the Violent Femmes and how they lost their drummer and they're replacing him.
And the Violent Femmes reunion is over. The drummer, Victor De Lorenzo, quit on Tuesday. So the tour will go on, but with a new drummer. It won't be the original drummer anymore.
Wow. So he's gone, daddy gone?
See what I mean?
Like he just got punched right in the gut.
Right there. It's just, I got an embolism. I got a bubble. I got a bubble in my bloodstream, and now it's all over.
He played
me.
These summer festivals and got a blister in the sun? Oh. I'm just asking.
Ralph, just wrap it up.
All right, Lisa. I think
please.
That's a good idea.
Just got to add it up.
Yeah.
Oh, you. Dave.
Shut up.
E2.
Dave.
David.
What?
Dave. Come
listen,
on.
Listen to Dave laughing at Dave.
No one likes Dave more than Dave does.
That was awesome. Dave for the save. Woohoo! Bean, would you like to take that back?
Nope.
No. You're saying you no. Like you're saying you're back. Fine with that.
Is he gone, daddy gone? He's the drummer for the Violent Femmes. How can I take that back?
We
that
get it.
That needed to be said. That
did not need to be said.
And I'm honored and proud to have my little friend Dave with the assist on that
come
one,
in with
too.
The save. Yeah. I saved it. He was hanging there, and I came in and picked him up and saved him.
Yesterday, we were talking about Lady Gaga and her naked video for this spiritual guru.
Yes.
Marina somebody, they're trying to do a Kickstarter where they're getting money so that she can start her studio. And
yeah, and this is a lady who puts Lady Gaga like naked out in the woods or something with a mask on and just yelling at the sky. And it's supposed to be some sort of a way to, I don't know, get back in touch with your humanity. I don't really understand what's happening.
So yesterday we were talking to Marina. What are you trying to raise money for here?
Sister's got to eat.
Sister's got to eat. Okay. What was that?
That's a llama.
Why is there a llama there?
Why do you have a llama?
It's the Dalai Lama.
Oh, wow.
You're going in the file, Marina.
Would you like to take that back?
Marina?
Hello?
Hi, welcome back to the show.
Namaste.
Namaste.
Namaste to you as well. Right, okay. We actually don't have time for that.
Marina?
Marina? Okay.
Would you like to take that back?
What do you think?
I think you're probably standing by that.
Well, hello, Dolly.
Would you like to take that back?
So the answer is no?
Yeah, all right. The answer is no. Speaking of Vampire Weekend, they are one of the bands that played for us this weekend at the 24th annual sold-out Almost Acoustic Christmas concert. Night 2, which was last night, headlined by Arcade Fire and Phoenix, is streaming all day long today at KROQ.com. So if you were not there, or you were and you want to see it again, you can see it for free on the website right now, and you should.
But I think you only have 24 hours, right?
That's right. Just okay. Through the day today, you can watch it, yeah.
I need to go to Wendy's, and I'll tell you why. The Wendy's in Lovejoy, Georgia, there was a woman that drove through the drive-thru, and she got a burger, and she said, this smells a little weird.
Uh-oh.
And she opened up
I don't like where this story's headed.
She kind of opened up the burger to see what's going on in there, and there was a half-smoked blunt in
oh!
It.
Yeah.
That's not what you want in your food.
Yes, no.
First of all, what? Yes, it is.
It's not really considered an edible, Kevin.
No, you don't want that in your food. You don't want somebody, look, if somebody wants to hand you a joint with your purchase, that's one
all
thing.
Right.
You don't want somebody's leftovers in your food.
But do you call the police?
I mean, really?
No, you don't call the police.
Come on.
You go You go back to the restaurant and you say, hey, give me another burger. That's
right.
What you do.
I get burgers free for a year. That's what I
there
get.
You go. There you otherwise, go. I'm going to the newspaper. That's right. What they tell them. Well, we wanted to find out more about how this event happened, why employee Amy Selber, 32, ended up being arrested, by the way, for possession. The woman who worked at the Wendy's who had smoked the joint and left it in the food. So we asked Dave to get the Love Joy Georgia Wendy's restaurant location on the line. I think we have them now. Hello.
Hello.
This is Wendy's.
Thanks for calling Wendy's. How can I help you?
Kevin and Bean Show, K-Rock Los Angeles. Who's this, please?
I'm Carl.
Hi, Carl.
How you doing?
You know why we're calling. Your Wendy's is all over the news right now.
Okay, drive on through. We'll get your order.
No.
What can I help you with?
No, we're not in the drive-thru. We're talking to you on the phone from California.
Oh, we don't deliver to California.
We're not asking for a delivery. That's just where we exist, where we live.
Okay.
All right.
Carl,
do you exist?
Well, yeah.
Okay.
Have you?
I do, too.
Right.
Right, right. Whoa. Aren't you at work right now, Carl? Aren't you at the Wendy's?
Thanks for coming to Wendy's. What can I get for you?
We're not at the drive-thru. So,
drive
Carl, do you know this Amy Selber who works at your store?
I do know Amy. Would you like a Frosty with that?
No. Do you know what happened to her? Did you hear about her leaving a joint in somebody's burger and handing it out the drive-thru?
I know. Can you imagine? What a waste of a joint.
Right. But, Carl, you guys shouldn't be...
You exist in California.
Right. You shouldn't be smoking...
I exist here, man.
Right.
That's crazy.
That is crazy.
It's not
we're
crazy.
We're existing on the same place at the... But not... We're on the planet at the same time existing.
Right.
But you're there.
Carl, are you on a party bus?
Oh, yes, he is.
How are they tolerating this drug use at the restaurant while you're making food?
Well, it has affected us enormously here at Wendy's. We can only smoke from bongs now.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, we can't smoke joints no more.
Wow, you're really cracking down.
Well, you know, once Amy dropped that joint in that lady's burger.
Oh, you heard about that?
Yeah, it done changed everything about us here at Wendy's.
Okay, I got you.
First of all.
Yes, Carl?
First of all.
I'm sorry. I lost it. I don't know what I was going to say.
You may be too high to have a conversation on the phone. I have the hiccups. I'm sorry.
What the hell?
I have the hiccups. I apologize.
What the hell indeed?
Would you like a Frosty with that?
Yes, I would. Thank you, Carl. Very excited to welcome one of our very favorite people back to the Kevin and Bean Show, whether he's talking about his music with 30 Seconds to Mars or his latest movie. And it's been a while since he's been in theaters, as he is this week with Dallas Buyers Club, our friend Jared Leto, back on the phone on the Kevin and Bean Show. Hey, Jared, what's going on, buddy?
Hey, guys. Thanks so much for having me. How you doing?
Very good. Thank you.
Our pleasure. How's England? Is it cold over there?
London is beautiful. It's actually it's cold and a little rainy, but actually really nice out at the same time.
Well, that's cool.
Nice.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, it's great to have you back on. Last time we had you in with the record came out, and we talked to you from NASA. You've just been all over the world this year, it seems like, and now everybody's talking about this Dallas Buyers Club. Kevin, tell Jared what you told me when you came in Monday.
Well, my wife has good music, movie taste, and I have none. So, and I don't really follow all that closely, but she said, this Dallas Buyers Club, we got to see. So we got a screener of it. We watched it Saturday night, and somebody in the room said, who's that girl? What band is that girl in? And I said, I don't know what you're talking about. Because you were, by the way, a super hot. So then I looked at your eyes closely. I was like, that's Jared Leto at 30 Seconds to Mars. And they were like, oh, yeah, 30 Seconds to Mars. That's what we thought. Apparently that, of course, is all the talk. But I knew nothing about it going in. And I want to date you. Is that cool?
Are you flirting with me?
I sort of am.
Oh, so you're saying even though you've known Jared for years, you've been 1 foot away from his pretty face, Kevin. You sat there and watched him in a movie and didn't realize it was him you were watching.
Correct.
Well, it's amazing what a set of high heels can do for you. I recommend you try it. And, you know, not only that, I had the wig and the lashes and the lipstick. And
you had it going on, sister.
Oh, man, let me tell you, that little Brazilian bubble butt, I was on fire.
So this Rayon that you play in the film, she is a real person. Matthew McConaughey is playing the real guy, and you're playing a real person who went into business with him to try to help get these untested drugs to people suffering from HIV back in the 80s. So this person existed for reals, and you researched him as a real person, right?
Well, no, my character actually isn't real. She's an amalgamation of several people. I based her on some people that I had met in real life, some transgendered people that were really kind and shared their life with me and taught me so much about that world. But I was able to actually have a bit more free reign because it wasn't based on a real person. But, you know, this was the role of a lifetime. I play a transgendered woman who is addicted to drugs and dying of AIDS, incredibly challenging, lost 30, 40 pounds, waxed my entire body, including my eyebrows, and it was once in a lifetime.
Is that why I wondered why you took this role? Because it has been 5 or 6 years since you've actually acted, right?
It's been almost 6 years since I made a film. You know, I've been behind the camera a lot, making videos for 30 Seconds to Mars, making a feature-length documentary about the making of This Is War, and, you know, a lot of other things. So a lot of time behind the camera, but I hadn't made a film in almost 6 years.
But I was so curious. Look, I understand as an actor you want a challenging role, and this certainly is that. But with all the health problems you went through, with the with the gout and everything like that for the Chapter 27 movie, weren't you just a little bit worried about putting your body through the ringer again, Jared?
Yeah, I was a little concerned, and it wasn't easy. There were a few nights that I had a really difficult time. My body was reacting in a pretty intense and bizarre way. But I felt it was incredibly important. You know, when you lose weight like this, it changes the way you walk, the way you talk, the way that people treat you. It adds a certain amount of fragility to the role, and it's a really necessary thing to do.
And are you the kind that stays in character around the clock?
Yeah.
What's that like for people you run into on the street that are fans of yours and see you and must think, oh my God, this is horrible, what's happening to Jared?
Yeah, you do get that.
He's lost it.
They think that you something is incredibly wrong. But I kind of hibernated. I didn't see very many people when I was making the film, and I stayed as focused as I could because I knew it was an incredible opportunity. This is a really special movie. I think it's the role of a lifetime. It's one of the best things I've ever done. And you know, it was interesting. It was right around the time we were wrapping up Love, Lust, Faith, and Dreams, our new album. And there was a lot going on. I almost turned it down because I had so much happening with the music.
Right.
But I'm really glad that I took the time to make the film.
I'll tell you, it's a fantastic film, and it's heartbreaking in that a doctor would look Matthew McConaughey in the eye and say, you have 30 days to live. You have HIV. Now you have AIDS, and you have 30 days to live. And he says, I need some medicine. And they go, it's not tested. How long will it take? About 12 months. You just told me I have 30 days to live. It's just the combination of those two things is so heartbreaking.
It is. And, you know, I think it's really timely with all the conversations about health care going on out there. It's a really timely film as well. The thing about the film, I think it surprises people, is it's really funny as well. It's not just a dark, depressing movie. It's a movie about survival. It's a movie about fighting for what you believe in. And, I'm really proud to be a part of it.
Tell me about Matthew McConaughey. Did you know him at all before this film, Jared?
I didn't know him before the film, and I didn't know him after the film. I actually, you know, he was saying at the Toronto Film Festival where the film premiered that we had never met until Toronto, and that was actually true because I always communicated with him through the role, through Rayon, as Rayon.
All right, seriously.
Yeah.
How long did it take you to do the movie?
We shot in 25 days.
Okay, so like by day 21, doesn't somebody go, stop it?
No.
Just talk to me. I want to talk to Jared. Is he in there?
I think everyone was really supportive, and they recognized that there was something really special going on with the film, not just with me or my performance, but with the film itself. And, you know, we all wanted to contribute the best that we could. And, you know, we did what we had to do individually in order to focus and commit and contribute.
This is the voice of Jared Leto here on the Kevin Bean Show. We're talking about his excellent film called Dallas Buyers Club, now playing in select theaters. You check that out. And Jared, I just want to ask before you go, because you made reference to the other movie that you've been making. December 3rd, just a couple weeks away, that film's going to be available on iTunes. It's called Artifact. And this is what? A documentary about your band and the music business, right?
It's about the making of This Is War. It's about our battle with EMI, our record company, who sued us for $30 million when we disputed our contract. You know, we had sold a lot of records with an album called A Beautiful Lie.
And right.
a song called The Kill on it was obviously a really big song for us and from yesterday. And, you know, we toured the world. We sold millions of albums. We came back and found out that not only would we never be paid a single penny, but that we were actually millions of dollars in debt. So we started to look into it, and we started to fight for to be treated fairly, and we filmed everything. So this is a wow. movie about that. But it's a great time. You know, we got Artifact coming out. We have Dallas Buyers Club out now. It's getting all kinds of critical praise. We have City of Angels, which is this little documentary, this little music video slash short film with Kanye West and James Franco and Selena Gomez and Lindsay Lohan, talking about life, love, fame, and dreams in the City of Angels.
So, where can we find that? The last one,
City of Angels. It's on YouTube and Vevo, and it's been a viral phenomenon. It has millions and millions of hits just after a couple of weeks out, and you know, it's a really moving piece. So if you do watch it, make sure you bring a hanky or two.
All right.
So you guys, obviously the band survived and went on to make another great album with a different label. Do you feel like you're straight up now in terms of the finances now? Is it a little more fair toward the artists as a result of the fight that you put up against the old label?
It's progress, not perfection, is what you say.
Right.
You know, it's a complicated business. It's a complicated time in the music business. You know, I mean, some of the biggest acts in the world are coming out, not selling very many albums. Some of the biggest pop stars in the world are coming out, not selling very many albums. There are very few people that are selling records that are generating revenue for these giant companies.
Right.
You know, if you're lucky, you're selling some singles, but most people aren't. So it's an incredibly challenging time for everyone, not just the artist, but for the label themselves.
Well, Dallas Buyers Club is in limited release. I have seen it, and it is awesome. It's a really, really great movie, and it's worth seeking out. It may not be in all theaters, but it's worth seeking out and watching this weekend.
Yeah, Jared, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Of course. It's always great to have you on the Kevin Bean Show. We love you, and we hope you have a wonderful time over there in Europe and a fantastic holiday season, and we'll look forward to seeing what's next for you guys, all right?
You too. I miss you guys. I'll see you soon.
Thanks,
Thank you.
Take care.
Bye now.
One of the purest pleasures in life is ringing up a long-distance phone bill on the company.
That's right. There's nothing better than free prank calls. I think we got one ready for you now. Kevin and I are decided that we're going to call Nepal on this fascinating story that we'll tell you about in a moment. And Ralph bursts in and says, please don't do this. And we say, why? It's fun when we call foreign countries
but
and check up on the news.
It always goes the same way.
How?
Someone will answer the phone.
Well?
You go, yes. Are there naked women in your fields farming? Are there naked women? Click. That'll be the first call. Let's call someone else then. Hello? Yes. Do you have naked women in your fields farming?
But, Ralph, they have naked women in their fields farming.
I understand. I'm telling you, the communication will not be strong on either end.
Here's the story out of Kathmandu, Nepal. Female rice farmers are plowing their fields at night in the nude to please the rain gods during a dry spell in southwestern Nepal.
And how can you not want to know about that? Oh, I want to know about it. I'm saying you won't get us any information about it.
The god of rain appreciates female nudity.
And the capital say, no, are there naked women in your field? But maybe you should take this one, Bean. And then Bean will say, hi, we're calling from Los Angeles. Radio station. Do you have radio there in Nepal? And the capital say,
What's your favorite station?
Are there naked people in your field? And we'll get that for about 6.5 minutes and then play song commercials.
You understand. No, you forgot the big grand finale. Give me the big grand finale.
Right. Yeah, then there'll be a big music bed underneath
there.
And we'll applaud how weak we were.
Okay.
We will celebrate our lameness.
Let's call Kathmandu. Did you know that Kathmandu is 12 hours and 45 minutes ahead of us?
And about 150 years behind us.
Isn't that odd that they're 12 hours and 45 minutes ahead?
I think I'm going to Kathmandu.
You forgot
The comedy tie-in pop song. I forgot that part.
See, we got more going on than you give us credit for. We're prepared for this bit. And as Kevin mentioned, he speaks fluent Nepalese or whatever they speak over there.
That's right, Nepalese.
Are there naked women in your fields?
Okay, good sign. Phone is ringing.
Okay. D. La Annapurna Hotel.
Oh, here we go.
D. La Annapurna Hotel.
Ralph, prepare to apologize, my friend, You have been wrong before.
We will accept your apology in just a moment as we find out the behind-the-scenes details of women rice farmers doing it in the nude.
Phone is ringing.
But you forgot about this one.
I forgot about
they wouldn't answer.
No answer. I forgot about that part.
It's a hotel.
Well, they're busy. Yeah.
They're checking in people, and they're ready, getting ready for the night.
Sure.
Come on. Everything's fine.
It's what, like 9 o'clock there?
It's quarter to 9.
It's not 9. It's quarter till 9.
Okay.
So odd.
And by the way, Ralph, we have other phone numbers. It's not like we're putting all our eggs in one basket.
I'm sure of it.
Okay. We can call back if this one doesn't work.
Try the Radisson.
Yeah. We're already on to the second
number. Here we go. Here's the high level of success rate that this bit always has, once again, coming through.
What if the person that answers the phone is very familiar with the fact that women are plowing in the nude and is very fascinated by it and sheds a lot of light on it so that we can all understand a little bit more?
Ever happened once?
No.
like every time we call and ask about the monkeys in India, they go, well, there's no monkeys here.
There's no monkeys.
And we don't know what you're talking about.
We got Kevin's great part, too. Do you speak English?
What's wrong with asking that?
Well, the first thing they say, hello?
Hello?
You forgot about that.
What was that?
I don't know. Hello?
A rhesus monkey answered the phone.
is this a
robot?
You forgot about the busy tone, too.
At what point do I get the apology for having been doubted about this segment?
We're a long ways from that.
You are playing on the train tracks, and I see the train coming, and you're two deaf kids
don't
from the home on the
hill. Don't you understand that there are women that are plowing nude?
I do understand.
Because they honestly believe that that's going to make it rain.
I understand
that. Man, this is weak.
All right, hold on. This one's going to work, though. This one's going to work. By the way, there is a backup plan that we haven't gotten to.
Oh, good. I don't know what that is.
That's where Ralph runs into the other room and pretends to be the Nepalese guy on the other end of the phone.
I'm not participating this time. I'm not contributing to your delinquency.
Hey, Dave, King of Mexico, get ready to be the guy in Nepalese or Nepal in a minute.
All right, this is a good, strong phone ring. I think this one's going to help us out. This is going to be good.
You feel good about the phone ring?
I do.
Okay. I'm with Ralph now.
it sounds like it's powerful and impactful.
Like grasping at straws. Oh, good phone ring. Good phone ring.
Come on, you guys. Pick up the goddamn phone.
Did you call these places ahead of time and say don't answer?
I am purely an observer.
Oh, Ralph screwed us,
Bean. I have risen above your little fray.
You called them and you said don't participate. It's just going to be a dumb little radio show.
You know what might happen? What might be happening right now is they're not answering the phone because they're out in the fields plowing naked.
See?
See?
Sure, that's what's happening.
En masse, they're all out there as a society plowing naked.
I think I'm going to Kathmandu. That's really, really where I'm going to.
Plow in the nude.
Done this job.
How come we
for
didn't have you sing it?
Plow in the and nude. Have no idea that this is always the way it goes.
All right, let's try the first one.
Have
again.
You learned from no?
Yeah, try that one.
You have no sense.
You're
of experience.
Don't be so negative.
How many numbers are you going
to
try?
You need to be positive, Ralph. You need to think positive vibes.
I did that
that's
for the first 5 years, and then year six, I woke up.
Positive vibes. That's what we thrive on here at the Kevin and Bean Show. This is all going to go really well in just a second.
As far as I'm concerned, Ralph is killing the bit with his negative energy.
See, that's the problem.
That's it. It's my,
they're
it's
not
my
answering
bad.
Because of your negative energy going down the phone line.
How about all the other times you've called countries where I wasn't being negative?
Other problems. You were being negative in the other room, maybe. I don't know.
You ought to be able to call Nepal, by the way. What's the deal with this?
Well, why can't we call?
Apparently you can.
Their tourism business must be suffering. The fact that no one picks up the phone there at their hotels.
This is where Mount Everest is in Nepal, right? I mean, they have millions of visitors. It seems like they got to have a phone that works. Come on.
Have you climbed Mount Everest, sir?
Yeah, that's a question that Bina would ask.
That's right.
Are there nude women on Mount Everest?
Can we play this? William Hung.
Time after time.
This is a time staller.
Mm-hmm. I've done my sentence.
We're doing ours.
Committed no crime. And bad mistakes.
Give it up. That's what I'm saying.
I'm with Ralph now.
Give it up.
I made a few.
All right, one more call.
You are not the champions.
Can I try one more time?
You are Ralph, not winners.
Ralph, we're going to make one more call, and if this one doesn't answer, if we don't get somebody on the phone, we will apologize to you because you will have proven your point that we never should have attempted.
They think that it's going to cause rain. You understand that?
But I understand the story, Kevin.
Plowing naked.
You answer the phone, Nepal.
You don't answer the
phone. That's Dave the King of Mexico answered.
Dave, you don't answer the phone the country that you're in.
I don't know.
Is that a big phone booth in the center of Nepal?
No. When people call you, do you answer the phone, America?
Well, you know, you figure you're calling somewhere.
There it is, ladies and gentlemen. If you just tuned in, we got the exclusive report on plowing naked in Nepal.
He answers the phone, Nepal.
I'm getting out of this business.
Right. I'm right behind you, pal.
I apologize.
I'm
going to
open
a
hardware store.
A lot of buzz on this new band from Britain called Bastille. They are in Southern California for some shows coming up next month, and they're going to be joining us in studio here on the Kevin Amin Show in about a half an hour or so and performing live for us. The record is already out. I heard it a lot on the radio when I was in England a couple weeks ago. They're big-time stars over there, Kevin.
So good.
Yeah, really good. Bastille joining us next hour here on the Kevin Amin Show. First, though, we're going to be taking your telephone calls on whether you've ever hidden anything in your body. It's been about 3 years since we've done this topic, and last time we were stunned at how many people had occasion to hide something up in them.
Yeah,
get away from their parents or get away from a teacher or a counselor or the police or something like that. Apparently it's going on all the time, Kevin.
We always discuss this when we bring up a topic. Will anyone call? And we were shocked last time.
Yeah, because that's the one you go, nobody.
So here's the headline. You tell us if you'd read further. Woman gets 25 years for gun in vagina, meth in butt.
That's impressive.
Come on. An Oklahoma woman was sentenced to 25 years in prison after pleading no contest to meth possession with the intent to distribute, gun possession by a convicted felon, and bringing contraband into jail. So while she was being booked in March for drug possession, they discovered a 5-shot revolver in her vagina and 2 plastic baggies of meth.
Damn.
In the other one.
Girl.
So.
Can those things get lost?
I don't have much firsthand knowledge of that. Muggs, can those things get lost?
Yeah,
they can. Okay, they can.
So, Lisa, let's as we prepare to take phone calls from our listeners with similar experiences.
Sometimes I hate being the only girl.
At 1-800-520-1067. Yeah, I do want to ask about your kangaroo pouch. Now, tell me how it's like having an extra purse, right? I mean, basically, you just look at your vagina. It's just additional storage space,
you know,
right?
When I'm out, like in the past, when I've been out on a date and I just needed some mad money, they call that, you know, in case things went wrong.
Sure.
That's where I put it.
Where you put it?
Yeah, I just stuck it there. Just like, what if you get robbed or something? You still need cash to get home, right?
Right, that's
so
true.
You just stick it there.
And they probably won't find that.
Right, exactly.
I just, I'm trying to think about what the circumstances would be. And of course, I don't have, you know, all the parts, but like, under what circumstances would I ever think I would want to hide something in my butt?
She put meth in her butt, 2 baggies.
Going into jail. That's all. That's number one. That's
but
when
look,
I
I've,
mostly do it.
And look, then, I've seen enough Orange Is the New Black to know that they make you squat and spread them. You're not going to keep something in your butt.
Well, these are the smartest people.
They did catch her. That's true.
You're in the middle of a drug deal, and you don't want them to know where it is because maybe they'll rip you off.
Oh,
so you
good.
Wait till you get the cash.
What
you
do
go,
you think? I bring
I'll
the drugs
right
with me,
right?
That kind of thing.
See, smart. That's the other reason.
Well, this is awesome because when she was arrested, she and her friend, this is Christine Harris we're talking about, the woman in Oklahoma, she and her friend were arrested at the Dairy Lou Drive-In, which, by the way, apparently, according to this article, I'm glad they mentioned, is the home of the Hercules.
All right.
I don't know what the Hercules is, but let's order one. The other woman had a hypodermic needle in her shoe, so she was hiding something too, but not nearly as creative as our dear beloved Christine, who had the vagina filled with a gun, which, by the way, seems like a dangerous place to carry a loaded firearm. It was loaded.
Yeah, we didn't bring that part up. It was loaded.
Oh, my God.
Things go wrong there.
Wow.
You're in a lot of trouble.
That's not smart.
What did you put inside your vagina?
That's the question.
All right. So I don't know how it's going to go, but the phone lines are open. Toll free 1-800-520-1067. Ladies, if you've ever used the front or the back, gentlemen, if you've used the back, we want to hear from you what you have hidden and why.
Our listeners are going to come through. I know they are.
I can honestly say I've never dealt with any of these topics, unfortunately, or fortunately. So 1-800-520-1067. We'll take your calls right after this.
You want the good news or the bad news?
The good news?
Good news is plenty of calls on people hiding stuff in their bodies.
Bad news?
All dudes. Every one of them is a dude. We'll be talking about a lot of man ass here in the next few minutes. We are, if you're just joining us at the Kevin and Bean Show, we're talking about this woman in Oklahoma who was being booked into prison for drug possession, and it turned out she was hiding a weapon, an actual gun, a loaded weapon in her vagina, and a couple of bags of meth in her butt. And it got us talking about how you might have hidden things inside your body to avoid detection. And that's the topic on the table at 1-800-520-1067. Let's talk to Steve. He's done a little jail time. He's on line one. He'll get us going here. We can find out how this works. Hi, Steve. Welcome to the Kevin and Bean Show.
Good morning, Kevin and Bean. Good morning, Lisa May.
Good morning.
So you needed a storage place.
Yeah, you could say that. I did 6.5 years in prison.
Wow.
And before something was going to go down on the yard, to say like a riot or something like that, you'd have to get prepared. And for me, getting prepared was a half a can of tobacco, 2D batteries, my homemade tattoo gun, a syringe, 2 lighters, and a pack of rolling paper.
Whoa! Ah. Whoa! Hold on. Hold the phone. You did all that at once?
Well, it was 2 separate small packages, but yes.
And the reason you have to do that, you have to gather up all your contraband, is because what? After something goes down, they inspect all the cells or something, and you knew it would be discovered if it weren't hidden?
Well, plus if you're going to go to the hole, because if you, like, incited it or you got hurt or something like that, you didn't want any of that stuff out.
I see.
Wow. So is that pretty commonplace? I mean, would you say that a lot of people walking around are hiding stuff in their butt?
I would not know that.
You said two D batteries.
Yes, sir.
Dude, let's just make up a car battery.
whatever you're running, you should buy one that runs on AAAs instead. All right, Steve. Hope you're staying clean now and out of trouble. Thank you very much for the call. We appreciate it. Let's try Sam. Sam is on line 3, and he joins us on the Kevin and Bean Show. Hi, Sam. Welcome to the show.
Hey, what's up, Kevin, Bean, Lisa?
Hello.
What was happening with you?
Nothing. I was at a rave. I had just picked up some pills. And of ecstasy, and a security guard was coming after me and my group of friends. I ended up putting a baggie of ecstasy pills in my keister in my butt. And,
right. But wait a minute. You were doing that while running from a cop?
No. Security guards.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, the point is, how did you do it while running?
You were running and you accomplished that?
Well, I had the baggie in my hand, so I just put it between my butt cheeks and hopefully it held them in.
All right. Did it?
All of them except 5.
All of them except 5.
That must have been a crazy night when those got absorbed into your sphincter.
Oh, no. They fell out of the baggie. They were in my pocket.
That's question one. Question two is, ecstasy at a rave? Are you kidding?
Yeah.
No, I'm just kidding. I'm just joking. Thank you for the call.
Thanks, Sam. Let's go to Mario. Mario's on line 4.
Yes.
He's up next on the Kevin. It says 6, but I think it's 4.
Hi, Mario.
Hello, Dean, Kevin, Lisa.
Hi, Mario.
Hello.
I have a bad feeling about Mario.
I do, too.
What were you hiding in your butt?
Oh, well, first of all, I just woke up, and the first thing I heard was, what's up in your butt?
And you were like, hey, that's me.
Yeah, that's me. I need to call in. I needed to turn myself 96 hours in jail, and I ended up putting a chocolate bar where chocolate usually comes out of. Mm-hmm. So basically what ended up happening, I ended up going in there, went through the whole process. They never found it. It was deep inside. In the middle of the night, I was trying to take it out, and the whole bag disintegrated, and the poop and the goodies.
All right. Okay. We don't need descriptive words, for God's sakes.
Now, please hang up on Mario. Was he saying that he was hiding a chocolate bar because it had drugs in it? Is that what
I believe so.
Yeah, it was inedible.
Okay. And he was only going to jail for 96 hours. Now, I know that can seem like a long time, but can't you get in a lot more trouble for that?
Yes.
I would think so, too, yeah.
I know where it is. It's in your butt.
Let's try Joe. He's on line 8, and he's up next here on the Kevin Meacher. Taking your calls at 1-800-520-1067. By the way, very disappointed in the ladies who listen to the Kevin and Bean Show. I want some I hid something in my vagina stories. Give us a call. Seriously.
Hey, Joe.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Tell us your story.
Like I was mentioning earlier, I went to prison for a few years, and you know, in prison you gotta watch your back all the time.
Sure.
So I had a 7-inch prison shank stuffed in my sphincter.
A 7-inch prison shank.
Yeah, that sounds kind of gay, but yeah, that's what it was.
For the whole time you were in jail.
Well, just when I was in the yard, when I was in prison yard. When I used to walk around the prison yard, I had to take it with me.
But isn't there a problem? Like, if you get jumped in jail, what kind of time? Hold on, guys. I got to get something out of my butt. I mean, what kind of time do you have?
Well, you have a bunch of homeboys around you, you know, watching your back while you squat and cough.
Oh, I see. I see.
Yeah. I would have been so happy today to have not heard squat and cough. I don't know why that has to be part of my morning.
You're not supposed to be doing that. You're not supposed to be putting things in your butt.
That's true. Joe, did you ever need the 7-inch knife?
Oh, thank God I never did, man, because that was looking more time right there.
But do you ever look back and go, I spent all that time with a 7-inch prison shank up my butt and I didn't need it? Nope. All right. Thank you for the call.
Getting a couple of ladies we're hearing from on the Kevin DeBede Facebook page. Susie writes in that she had a friend that hid a small bottle of her urine. Her friend did hid her urine in her vagina to take into the bathroom for a drug test.
Sure.
Great idea. Glenda writes in that she hid pepper spray in her vagina. Why? Because she was going to a Raiders game, so she needed protection.
So I that don't makes see that quickly accessible.
That's my point, is how accessible are these things?
All right, let's try Sarah. Here's our first vag call here on the Kevin DeBede Show. Hi, Sarah. Thanks for calling. What's going on?
Well, basically, I was going to a weenie roast one year and double bag 8 blunts really, really, really tight, and I put them right in the middle there and walked on in.
And no problem.
Why did you need to? Why did you need to hide anything going to weenie roast? We don't check and we don't care.
Hey, man, I take precaution, and they do check, but not there.
They check everywhere but there?
I like she brought 8.
Yeah, she did. She brought 8. Wow. She was ready for the full day.
No
yeah,
kidding.
It's a long show,
man,
Lisa. Come on.
Awesome,
you
show.
Showed up in time for the side stage, so you gotta really pace yourself.
We were there the whole day. I think
right.
That was the year where they closed it with DJ Adam.
Oh, right.
Yeah, that was an awesome show.
Yeah.
All right, let's do one more. How about, thank you very much, sir. Let's go to Christina. She's on line 3 here on the Kevin DeBede Show. Hi, Christina. Thanks a lot for listening and for calling. What's going on?
Hi. Well, okay, so there was this night that I'd been rousted by the cops earlier that night, so I was a little bit nervous about carrying my drugs on me. So I went to a friend's house, and I said, do you have anything that I can hide my pipe in? So he gives me a cigar case. So I'm hiding my meth pipe, all my bags of drugs and everything inside this cigar case. I don't know what to do with this. I put it up inside me. I was riding a bike.
What?
So as I was riding down the street, I got about half a block. The pain was too much. I crashed on the bike, and the cigar case went shooting out my vagina, down my pant leg, and all the way down the street.
Good morning.
Hey, everybody, eating breakfast? Enjoy.
Look, Kevin Smith is weird. You said you've got a story you can't wait to get on the air. What's going on?
I am bursting. I'm not going to say – I tell a lot of stories, and I'm not going to say this is the greatest story of all time, but this is hands down the weirdest story that I've ever been involved in.
Fantastic.
It happened mere not even 40 minutes ago.
Really?
Fantastic. Like this.
All right.
I wake up and I'm awake and I like to get centered when I wake up.
Mm-hmm.
So
I smell it.
Check my tweets.
You smell your center.
I can.
And when I say centered, I mean be with my wife. And when she says she can smell it, I don't know what that means.
Okay.
Is your wife a bong?
Lately, yes. In any event, that has no bearing on the story. This
right,
I don't see things. I just focus and organize and center. It's like a program you slip in. The brain.
All right. Uh-huh.
My dogs wake up with me. I bring them down to my office every morning. When I go walking in the hills to exercise, she's the one that comes with me. So one time I took her out to go outside. We have a top deck and whatnot. So I take her out on the deck. She's going to the bathroom. I look up and I see birds of prey. I saw a hawk circling. I was like, that's weird. I've never seen that here in the hills. And I've certainly never seen it this low.
Right.
And then I put two and two together. I was like, oh my Lord, he's he's bird of preying that little dog. Like, he's looking at the dog as a treat. And so from breakfast. That moment forward, yeah, I got real tight. And my wife's like, you're paranoid. And this is even before the weed. And I was like, no, man, I swear that bird was zeroing in. And I looked up in the internet, and there are all sorts of instances of birds of prey snatching little animals and going off. Every once in a while, there's a crimson video or two. And it is heartbreaking, dude. Like, whenever you see a rabbit get taken off by an owl and that screech, I never want that to happen to my little dog. So whenever I let her out, for years now, I've always been a bit vigilant.
You're supposed to be, yeah.
Lately, I've been a bit more lax because I'm like, you know, it's never happened. Maybe she's right. I am paranoid and whatnot. You're right to be paranoid. This morning, I go out, let the dogs out. We have the pool. We have the pool on the rooftop. Bought Affleck's house. Pool on the roof. So there's Shaggy walking by the edge of the pool, and I'm still kind of like doing the morning stretch, and I swear, this is no lie, dude. So I'm kind of waking up, and I look in the distance, and something catches my periphery, and it's coming low. And at this point, your mind is firing, and different synapses going like, I can't, this is weird, like it's unnatural. Nothing is normally in this viewpoint.
Right.
The moment it starts processing, this is unbelievable. I felt like Batman, dude. I saw an owl. The size, like the outstretching of my hand, coming so low to my deck, dude, that like when I looked and I'm slowing things down, Peter Parker style.
Right.
Maybe 10 feet if I had to. I measure things in jaws where they go, that's a 20 foot or 25. So everything to me is done in terms of 25 feet. So this is half a jaw's length away from me in distance.
Okay.
There's this owl, man. Like, and you have a second to be like, holy crap, because you never see it. And at first I think, like, this thing's coming at me. But I see it coming low, and I look, and that's when I see the dog is right near me. And the dog's facing in the other direction. This is where it gets nuts, dude. My first instinct, I always joke about, like, if I encountered threat, man, I'd try to fillet it away and stuff like that. I don't do well with danger.
You're
or
a lover,
risk
not a
management.
Fighter.
Absolutely.
I'm surprised you don't get robbed all the time of that out there.
People know, and still, they must figure I'm bad at it. They're like, he says he's never done it. Why would I want to be
just
the first?
Break into the front door and drop trowel.
I am that guy. I don't confront things. I'm not a fighter or anything like that. Jason Mewes would be the smart one and be like, I grabbed it with my fingers and choked it to death. I'm not that guy. But I had enough presence of mind. We're standing by the pool, and there's this pool toy, this circular, dopey thing that for months now, nobody goes in this damn pool. My wife put it in there at the beginning of summer, and it kind of mocks us and the pool as it just hauntingly floats around, unplayed with its lost a lot of air. So many times I almost just pulled it out of the pool and like, get rid of this. It was within reach, man. And this sounds crazy, dude. I had the presence of mind with half a jaw's length away from this bird to grab this pool toy and swung, and I hit an owl.
What?
I'm not lying, dude.
You hit it in the air?
I hit it in the air. It was the perfect connection. You would have thought I trained for this my whole life.
You're an owl ninja.
This pool toy, and I don't know where the wherewithal came from, the spin, but I just grabbed it, like, innately, because it's coming, and I'm like, I got a few seconds for this thing's going to grab this dog. And I can't hear those screams, and I'm not going to wrestle the owl. And I grab this thing, pap, it hits. It hit my pool chair, glanced up, and took off again.
And flew away.
And I watched it, go up and circle back, and I grabbed my pool toy, and I get into this position, but then it circled and went the other way over Runyon. Dude, I've never been involved with nature like that. It was such a rush.
Man,
like, I enjoy
animal.
I enjoy getting centered. And I look, let's be honest. I like smoking weed.
Sure.
This blew that away. Now all I want to do is punch owls out of the air.